Like to have a prayer said by our clerk.
O Lord, our Heavenly Father, teach us to put to good account whatever talents thou hast lent us, to discuss with patience and zeal the municipal affairs which have come before us this day, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
I'd like to ask members of council if they have any disclosure or pecuniary interest in general nature thereof. Anyone have any? No one has any to declare. Thank you. We're going to start the meeting off with the provision of notice to the public in reference to policies. We're going to be dealing with two policies tonight. So we'll go with that first. Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor DePasquale. I'm just wondering if the format where we reviewed the procedural bylaw, where we went through line by line, if that's what council wishes to do, or if council wishes to address the procedural bylaw through questions and concerns that they've had as a result of the new provision of notice policy being developed.
I'm fine with just questions. If you have concerns, I don't know what everybody else.
Anyone else? Nothing? Council Fryer, go ahead.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you to the CAO on page 5, under procedures, new section. Right now it states that administration has the authority to establish procedures for implementing this policy and to amend those procedures as required in the best interest of the town with the concurrence of the CAO and solicitor. We also add in there and council. Changes would be made, it would be brought to council prior to the implementation of it.
Sure. That's noted.
We're in the notice of the public.
Okay. Excuse me, Councillor Fryer, just but now that's only for the procedure part, not the policy. Is that the way you're seeing it?
I'm seeing it all the way through. Whenever they're asking that for CAO and solicitor, we could add council for approval too.
Okay, on the procedures, the administrative procedures that we would develop. Okay. All right. Did you get the right one?
Any other comments? Council Fusion.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor DePasquale. On page 5, number 7, it says removals, intent, exclusions, references, consequences of non-compliance. Are we dealing with consequences of non-compliance at all in this procedure bylaw, or are we just eliminating that part for that section?
Page 5 of 9.
Just trying to find the section that you're talking about, Councillor Fusion.
Just a little page 5 or 9.
Page 2 of the original policy. Page 2 of the original policy. The original.
The handwritten.
same page, even the same page, sign.
It's page 5 of 9.
Got it?
Yeah.
Provision of notice to the public. I think you have the original, I'm speaking on the revised.
Yeah.
We have the red dot.
Yeah, that's what you're looking at.
Yeah.
The last one.
All right, so the new policy that was developed in accordance with the municipal act. Consequences of not providing adequate notice are, you know, the community can always approach the ombudsman for that type of non-compliance, and that's basically what was provided in the municipal act before.
Councilor Pugh.
I just wondered why it's removed from, it says removals, and I just wondered why it's removed from the original, our original one that we were working on, and now the new one, it says it's removed. The intent, the exclusions, the preferences, related policies, but the consequences, I just wondered why that's been removed.
Well, the intent is to be in compliance with the bylaw that we've, the policy that we've created. If that's something that Councilor Puget would like to see back in there, we would just be making a reference as was in the original back to the municipal act. Is it just a point of clarification you'd like to ensure that's in the new policy?
It's just that I wonder what it means if we leave it out. Will it have any consequences to us if we leave it out, or if it should be included?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. If I may speak to the consequences in the previous, in the current policy that is that we are bound by. The consequences of non-compliance, if you actually read that portion of the policy, it doesn't state any consequences of non-compliance. So there isn't really any consequence of a non-compliance. So that's why it was removed from the policy. There isn't a consequence.
Okay. Anyone else? Councilor Walsh.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just further to Councilor Breyer's comment about number 7, adding the words "and council." How is that going to be worded? You know, he talked about administration has the authority to establish procedures for implementing the policy. A recommendation I think Councilor Breyer made was to add "and council" in that.
Council approval.
And council approval, or in consultation with council. I guess is what I'm, I guess the what I'm looking at, okay, are we again getting into the issue of, policy versus implementation? I'm asking here, okay? The difference between the policy and the implementation aspects. Developing the policy versus implementation of policy.
As far as implementing a policy, I mean, I believe all the council would decide that, wouldn't they?
Well, typically council approves the policies, the step-by-step implementation is usually left to administration. I think the understanding that I'm getting from Councilor Fryer here is that concurrence of the CEO and the town solicitor and council is something that he'd like to see added, just a further step once again. It would be up to administration to establish the procedures. Council would just be reaffirming them when we bring them back. That's the way I'm understanding it.
So would it be acceptable to put "in consultation with council"?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry?
clerk by definition.
If I may, I would just add that it we would just add that it's in concurrence of the CAO, the town solicitor, and the council.
Thank you.
All in favor of that? That motion or that move? All in favor?
There isn't really a motion for that part.
There's okay, no. That's fine. We pause.
No.
Okay. Next. Joan, sorry.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. On page 2 of 9, I just want to know what the difference is between a director and a manager. So 4.6, director is the person responsible for direction and operational control of the division, and then the manager reports directly to a director. So I guess what I want to know is who the manager is, like in this chain, who would the manager be?
Usually a manager would be an individual that's responsible for a certain function. So for example, in the I'll just use the economic development area, you have the manager of bylaw enforcement that reports to the economic developer. Director of Economic Development reports to the CAO. So
okay.
It's the layers that are built into the organization.
That's what I thought it was. I just want to make sure. Thank you.
Any other questions? Anything else you want to bring forward, Joe?
On page 8 of 9, item 2.35, section 358, overcharges caused by a gross or manifest error. What does that mean?
Through your worship, that's a tax-related issue through assessment. So typically, if there's a gross or manifest error, an appeal has to be made to the assessment review board. They would make a ruling based on the gross and manifest error, and then we would have to do a subsequent reduction in the tax roll. So those are typically related with regards to property tax assessments.
That's
usually it's MPAC, and MPAC is the only one that can adjust the assessment roll, and then we as a municipality have to implement the decisions of MPAC.
Anyone else?
If we're done with the provision of notice, I'd like to have a motion to adopt that policy as presented.
No. I have a motion from the board. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Jason.
That's okay. I'll move to adopt the policy amendments. And I guess this is the provision of notice to the public policy.
Seconder, Councilor Fryer. All in favor? Unanimous. Okay. We're going to move on to the tangible capital assets policy. Any questions or Joan?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I talked to Justin about this today, but I'm a little slow sometimes. So can you tell me again about the half-year rule?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, to Councilor Gordon. The half-year year rule is basically a standard accounting ruling. Doesn't really apply to a municipality, but say you were given a scenario where you're a for-profit company and for tax planning you wanted to increase your amortization, thus increasing your deduction for tax purposes, you would buy an asset towards the tail end of the year to get full amortization of that in that particular month or particular year for tax planning. So the half-year rule is created by the Institute of Chartered Accountants to ensure that there's no manipulation of the tax system that way. For a municipality, it's just best practice. It's prescribed by the Institute of Chartered Accountants, so that's why we put it in the policy as best practice.
Any other questions? Councilor Milosz?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. A question to the treasurer. Based on some of the financial information you've been given in the past, are we using the component approach or the whole asset approach when we're capitalizing our assets?
For the most part, it's the whole asset approach. There are some component pieces, particularly at the arena. There's like pieces of machinery that have components. Sewage treatment plant has a bit of componentization to it. Nothing significant, however. Most of it is all whole asset approach.
So if you, if we will take Texas Road, for example, which we're going to undertake soon, we have sidewalks, we have sewers, we have asphalt. Those aren't all depreciated at the same rate. So you are, in fact, breaking out some of those. You're going to treat it as whole asset, but you will still break out for class, tax class.
Correct. As we just discussed recently, the storm sewer component was grouped in with the roads. That will no longer be the case. The storm sewers for Texas Road will have sit in the storm sewer component. The pavement top will sit in its pavement top component. Mm-hmm. So the as the project completes, we will make the necessary adjustments for that to put that into the proper classes.
I'm going to come back to that when we start talking about the minimum values for capitalization and how the, some of the component issues tie in. I would like to sort of discuss that further.
Anyone else? Questions? Concerns? Councilman Lawrence?
Sorry. I guess, are we going to talk about the minimums now, or are we going to wait? Or okay.
Well,
the minimums that we have currently, you know, we're looking at 5,000. So I'm trying to find out where it's. I'll go back to it again.
Page 91. Page 10 of 14.
Page what?
10 of 14.
Page 10 of 14.
Okay. I'm just wondering if some of these are somewhat low by today's standards, because the more we put into the capitalization, the more we have to look at reserves. I mean, it all, you know, you're dumping assets for capitalization, now you have to build up more reserves. I'm wondering if some of these things are not, but you know, like $5,000 today, is that, you know, is it really, should we be capitalizing it, should we be expensing it?
I can speak to you from my past experience at the City of Windsor. There they use the $10,000 threshold.
I'm sorry?
There, at the City of Windsor, they use the $10,000 threshold.
Yeah.
But they also pull the number of assets together as well. So it totally becomes an exercise of how much we want to plan for the replacement of our capital assets in the future. And that really what's this whole exercise is all about.
Well, further to that, I mean, the treasurer has talked in the past about, you know, we have high value of assets on our books, and if we capitalize all these $5,000 items, I can see why we're going to have a $5,000. I mean, mind you, we've spent a lot of money in the arena. We spent a lot of, okay, so I mean, it's boosted the value. But if we capitalize every $5,000 expenditure, we, you know, we in effect boost our assets. Okay, and so again, I throw that out there for, you know, for consideration as to whether we want to maybe look at bumping that up, or understanding also though that it will affect operating costs, you know, in future years, because now we're taking things from capital and shift it to, you know, to operating. If we move that number, would we not be shifting some of that responsibility to operations?
I'll take a stab at it.
Sure.
And then the treasurer. From my my observation, I think realistically, Councilor Milosz, the reality of what our capital infrastructure deficit is on the books, and what we recognize, for example, the submitted capital budget for 2015, there is a funding shortfall of approximately $7 million. Mm-hmm. I think it would be far-fetched if we believe that any municipality is going to be able to fully fund their infrastructure gap without any participation from senior levels of government. I think actually is better for us to demonstrate the need for funding, and it's actually better for us to capitalize all of it so that senior levels of government understand the challenges we as municipalities are having in dealing with the replacement of our capital assets. So this is all information used for not only ourselves, but senior levels of government to recognize that as municipalities, we do have challenges. And I think if we just expense it, I mean, it's just my own opinion, and I'll let the treasurer offer his.
Yeah.
If we just expense it, I think those challenges don't get recognized.
Before the treasurer steps in, though, I do understand that, but I guess at the end of the day, under the concept of that you we talked about, paying our way along the way.
Sure.
Some of these small items, just get paid and move on. Okay, as opposed to, we're trying to build 3% levies right now to into this capital. I just throw that out there as a thought that maybe we need to consider, some of that structure of how we capitalize versus expense.
Fair enough. I guess I just look at who was the governing body that implemented this, and why do they need the information? So, from a municipal perspective, we have our various stakeholders that are here. They're our residents, but at senior levels of government, when they're developing programs, they're going to review our tangible capital asset plan, and they're going to make their determinations, I believe, on funding levels based on our deficits, right? So, in my opinion, the more we capitalize, the more it's going to demonstrate at a senior level of government that we have a need for participation from senior levels of government. That's my own opinion. If I was a for-profit business, Councillor Balazs, I totally agree with your concept. But I'm a municipality, and we're in the business of running municipalities, so we do look for senior levels of government to participate. Treasurer, do you want to add anything?
Okay,
through you, Mr. Mayor. Two-part question, so I'll give a two-part answer. So on the idea of the threshold being low, you have to remember they actually have to meet the need of a betterment. So repairs and maintenance will still be going through the operating account. So that's all defined at the front of the policy. So you're not going to get building improvement, perhaps painting town hall capitalized. That's not still going to happen. So the thresholds are there. They were established in the previous policy. Could we up them to 10? Sure. I don't really know how much of a big difference it would be. Most land improvements we're going to do are going to be significant anyway if we're going to capitalize them. So that's the answer to that part. Further to what Mr. Michelli said with regards to the senior level funding coming down, that new OCIF formula-based funding is a province-wide funding based on the amount of assets we own. So we actually got the highest amount in Essex County at $477,000 because, as I've been saying, through budget process, we own per resident the highest amount of infrastructure to replace. So that's why Amherstburg was so fortunate when it came to that type of investment. Further to that, the reason we needed to correct the tangible capital asset storm sewer was because when the government looks at funding us in the future, through that OCIF formula-based funding, we need to make sure we have the full asset package, because in that particular case, if we didn't have all of our assets in place, we would be short-funded from senior levels of the government. So to John's point, he's absolutely correct. The funding models that are coming down from the province rely heavily on our assets, on our financial statements, and will rely heavily on the town's ability to manage its asset management plan in the future. So. He's absolutely correct.
I'm glad you agree.
And one last point.
Sometimes.
And one last point to that then is that understand that we're telling our residents now, though, because we have all these assets, we have to have this large reserve. Okay, and so it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. I guess that's really what it amounts to.
It does, through your worship, to Councilman Walsh. It does. But it also makes the community decide at a point in time what assets they value and what the assets they would like us to continue to replace. That's, it'll be a decision that'll be facing the community in the future.
Thanks, Mr. Michelli. Any questions from council or Pooja? Councilor Pooja.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So on page appendix one, the asset useful life guidelines, it has a breakdown of asphalt road surface 20 years, concrete road surface 25 years. Do we need to expand on that? Because when you look down, for fire safety, like smoke detectors, they're good to 2020. Sprinkler system and plumbing, good to 2030. And then, so it gives a date that these things will come due, like the approximate year. Do we need that for everything, or is that just a general? Because I wonder how we will know. Like 20 years, like this could have been done 10 years ago, and we're just using the same figures. So do we need a year like we do in the smoke detectors? We have that year, 2020.
Through your worship, it's not actually 2020. It's just defining the expected useful life is 20 years. So it's not to 2030, Councilor Boucher. It's just that it has an expected useful life of 20 years. And sprinkler system had an expected useful life of 20 years. So all of these guidelines are guidelines used to define the useful life of the asset and when we believe replacement will occur. So, for example, when it comes to fire safety, we do have the issue of smoke detectors, but as we all know, carbon monoxide detection is now going to be a law effective, I think it's the 15th of this month or 17th of this month. So that's an asset class that's not even identified, and we'll probably have to add it to the tangible capital assets policy going forward. So this is best practices. This is what they look at is 20 years. And it's just using industry standards.
So.
Go ahead.
So as a follow-up, that isn't a year. Asphalt 2030, water lines 2030. That's not a year that it's coming.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, to Councilor Puget. We have assets in various different states. For example, Sandwich Street, which was just recently redone, that surface is an asphalt surface. It should last 20 years. So in 20 years from now, we'll be thinking of replacing Sandwich Street. Unfortunately, there's other streets that are very much at their useful life. Perhaps Texas Road is well beyond its 20-year useful life. So the need is now to capitalize it. So all of the assets of the town count, Councilor Puget, are capitalized in that $381 million number, and then they are depreciated systematically year after year down to, at the end of 2013, $245 million. And you can follow that all through the financial statements, and these useful lives are also reflected in our financial statements and what we follow as we depreciate our assets. So the two, this policy and our financial statements perfectly coincide.
Thank you, Mr. Russo. Councilor Moash.
I'm trying to understand the rationale of going from 30 to 20. That's a drastic change. And the second part of that question will be, is this going to require us to revisit our accumulated depreciation on our current assets?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, to Councilor Moash. Councilor Moash, I wouldn't be telling you the truth if I would be telling you that the previous policy was adhered to 100%. There are some significant deficiencies between the previous policy and what had happened. Obviously, in this policy, we see storm sewers are supposed to be its own separate class and amortized at 50 years. Obviously, that didn't happen. So what you see now in the current policy is exactly what we do for all of the assets on the financial statements. So we've gone and we've coincided the financial statements with this policy. There's no revision necessary on the financial statements, more revision of the policy. That was the standpoint we chose to go with.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Anyone have questions, concerns? Diane?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just when we do approve these, could we have hard copies so we can submit them in our binder? Because I know that I refer to it all the time. I pull them out, bring them to meetings. It's so much easier to have in front of me than to try to look for it when we're...
Sure. Anyone else? Any questions from the audience?
We need a motion to adopt that one.
Have a motion to adopt the policy, present policy. Jason?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I move to approve the new tangible capital assets policy with the revisions.
Seconder? Council Milosh? All in favor? Pat? We also have the report from Financial Services. Does someone want to put this forward? Councilor Fryer?
I'll move receipt of the report of the accounts payable regarding March 17th, March 31st be approved, that the Director of Finance Services be authorized to release the funds for approved payables, and the Director of Financial Services be authorized to release funds to the town of Tecumseh for council orientation.
That's Councilor Squire. Can we have a seconder for that? Councilor Pouget? All in favor? Motion passed. And that basically ends our agenda.
No.
We have a motion to adjourn.
Perfect time.
Mr. Mayor?
Sure. Second.
Seconded by the mayor. All in favor?
I'm really disappointed some people.
Stay away from meetings more often.
Okay.